get a second plate?
Take.
Rolling.
Take five.
Richard, was there ever a point that you had doubts about whether you were doing was the right thing? That maybe you shouldn't have been just dropped everything and taken off with Sissa?
There was never any doubt in my mind that when Sissa started organizing that he was going to do something. That he was, I never doubted for 1 second. That's why I supported him all the time, and even more so after I joined him. He convinced me to join and come full time. Even though I was helping him part time a lot, you know, I used to do all this, remodel his first office, build his first desk, and things like that. But it was on weekends and all the extra time I had. But when I came and joined him full time, that's why I did, because I believed that it could be done. Que si se puede, in other words, you know, that we could do it together or do something, and you know, we did, luckily.
Okay. You said there's a couple of stories that you'll always remember. Can you tell us one of them? Can you tell us the one about the flag?
There's some stories that I will always remember my brother by, because we had to think they're very dear to my heart. One of them is when he commissioned me to come up with a logo, come up with an emblem for the movement, for the union. And he said, like, what? I said, like, what do you have in mind? He says, well, I don't know. He said, I don't know. Isn't Richard like... maybe an eagle of some type, like that shows strength, you know. It's something that shows power, you know. And it's okay, so we kind of, I sat down, I kind of copied the Mexican eagle, you know, free-handed, and the, you know, like very powerful, you know, without the snake, you know, and then sitting on top of great vines or something like that, you know. And it was kind of nice. It was kind of a nice. When he looked at it, he liked it. Said, "This is very nice." This, you know, but this, you know, what is this? People won't be able to reproduce this. We want something that anybody can reproduce, you know, or can be reproduced real fast, like an easy like. And so I said, went back and I started thinking, what can people reproduce, you know? I mean, not everybody's an artist, or, you know, some people. And so I said, well, maybe straight lines, straight corners, and, you know, that sort of thing. And so I come up with the idea of the Thunderbird, what we call a Thunderbird. And I had the first drawing, and I had the basic... you know, like the idea. I had the idea of what it would be like, and I took it to him and everything, but it wasn't quite... the idea of straight lines and square corners and all that was fine, but what he didn't like was that after I had that, I had two little feet on the Thunderbird, like it looked like chicken feet, you know. It just didn't look good. There was something wrong. He says, there's something here. He says, take it back, see if you can... So I took it back, and I kind of... those little feet looked stupid. It didn't go with it. So I thought about it and thought about it, and finally came up with that bar, you know, how you set that little long bar in the bottom, instead of feet, it's got that bar. This is it, I thought I had found it, and I took it to them, and they just loved it. Everybody agreed that was it, and so we had it. That was the emblem. He says, you do the artwork on it. He says, you come up with a design, and the colors are mine. And then he shows the colors, the black eagle, the white background, and the red circle, or whatever, white circle and the red background. And so the colors were his. And he said, you know why it's red, white, and... red, black, white, and red. He said, no, that's the strongest combination of colors you can ever put together. And that's why we're doing that. And then he mentioned some others that had used the same colors, and it was true, you know. So that's what it came about.
What other stories? Is there a couple of stories? What would be the other
story? Another one that's, I think it's probably even my favorite story is the when he had the idea of coming up with a credit union. He came up, we had a board meeting, and he was talking about the needs of people, that we had to do a lot. Maybe not through the union, we had to have other entities that would help it would help every farm worker or anybody, any poor people. We had to have, other than the union, we had to have like the service center, and a credit union would be nice, and he came up with the idea of credit union. And the thing about Sissa, that once he got an idea in his head, he wouldn't drop it. He would never drop it. He would just keep it, you know, keep it, you know, back burner, but he'd bring it out sometimes, and that meant that he wanted to do it, you know. And so he told us about the credit union, because farm workers would have a lot of hard time. They can't borrow any money, because they can't understand that when you're working, anybody will lend you money, but they go and borrow money where they're not working. They tell the finance company or the bank, well, I'm not working right now, money, because I'm not working. And they won't lend them. They can't understand that. Why, you know? And they says, why do we need money if we're working? We need money when we're not working. That just, they say, so we have to have something for them so they could have something to borrow, whatever, $50, $100, whatever, when they need it. And so we all agreed that it was a great idea, you know. And he kept on, he even worked on the paperwork. He did the papers of incorporation. And he had everything ready. He did all the research, and he was ready. The only thing, we didn't have any money. We thought it was a great idea, but we didn't have any money. And just before I had started working full-time with Cesar, I had built me a modest little house, a little one-bedroom. I only had two kids, and it was a nice little house, but it was a small house. And one day he came up to me and says, Richard, he says, how much do you think your house is worth? I said, I don't know, Cesar. I said, probably $2,500, $3,000 at the most. He said, why don't we go to the bank and find out? So we went, Bank of America, I think it was, and they came and looked at the house. Says, yeah, we can lend you $3,700. It was already paid for it. He says, we can lend you $3,700. And boy, before you know it, my house was in hock, and we got $3,700 to start a credit union. And so we had the money, and then so he did the papers of incorporation, everything, and here we are. And we made a lot of mistakes, not knowing anything about finances, and what do we know about that? Nothing. And so we were so proud that we had money to lend a credit union. So we announced to farm workers, we put out a leaflet, or I think somehow we publicized that we had money to lend. Next day there was about 50 farm workers waiting outside the door before we opened the door. So they wanted to borrow money. And yeah, they lined up and we started, you know, him and I were making the loans, and he would, other people there. And they would come in for $50, $100. And so, and we didn't know anything, but I didn't even know what the word collateral meant, you know. Collateral and credit and things like that. And we just looked at him, and Caesar would look at us and say, yeah, he's okay. Like, you know, he would not, that he's okay. And so we lend him the money. Just later on, those loans became known as face loans. Now we make fun of them. We still call them face loans. And so anyway, we lent out the money, and we all the money was loaned out, and, you know, 50s, 100s, whatever. You know. And so that's a much money to start with, but we loaned it all out. And then we started making, well, next month when they start paying out, we're going to have so much. And then we could re-lend it again, like the way it's supposed to be. Okay? But even all those honest faces that we were lending money to, you know, some of those don't like to pay their money back. You know? So anyway, we had a hard time. We had a hard time collecting. We had to get somebody full-time to collect that money back, and we couldn't get it, and so forth. So, but the reason that I like the story so much is because even with all that, not knowing how to lend money and nothing like that, even with all that, like 30 years later, now almost 30 years later, that same little credit union went through all those hardships of almost going broke and being out of business because they wouldn't pay the money back. And some of them did. I'm saying all, but some did. Some, a lot of them didn't. And we didn't. We survived. That's what I'm trying to say. This beautiful story is that we survived that, and now we have a credit union that almost 30 years later is loaned over $20 million to farm workers. That's why I like that story. See. And no more face loans. Now we have professionals doing that, and they banker or people that know about finances, they ask for collateral, they ask for credit ratings, and they have to pay on time just like any other finance company or any other lending institution. And so it's been doing very well in the we're very proud of it, and I like it because it has really done over $20 million worth of service to farm workers. And that's what we're even up to, where they lend for new cars and, you know, down payments on houses and so forth. So, and, you know, it survived, and it was his idea, and he made it work because that's the way he was. He just stuck with it, made it work, and we have it. That's why I like that story so much.
Stop. But I think we got enough.
Yeah, we got plenty. Okay. Camera roll 32, sound roll 14, take 6.
You talked about earlier about the exciting times and the strikes and everything. Tell me a little bit about the boycotts. I mean, were they tough? Were they exciting?
The boycott was hard work, but it was fun hard work. You know, like exciting work. The boycott was. You had to be very creative to make to put a boycott together to make it work. You had to get a lot of people involved. Supporters and people would help you picket and people that would help you demonstrate and those sort of things. That's a boycott. That's the way it was, because you couldn't. You were picketing the product, you know, and getting people to leave the product alone, not to touch it. And that was very challenging. And there's many ways to do it, and it works, and it worked for us. I love the boycott. I did a lot of boycott. I think I did more boycott than actually field organizing in the early days. I spent a lot of time back east doing that, and I used to love it. It was a lot of fun. You came up with a lot of ideas that you didn't know they were there. They were just, in other words, you created a lot of stuff.
For example, what was one idea you created that you never thought of before?
Well, let's say, coming up with billboarding. For instance, billboarding, you know. You get those big billboards, and then you get up on top of the freeways, and as traffic is coming into work in the morning, everybody can see millions of, if not thousands, if not millions of people can see your signs, your message, you know. And then billboarding on New York on the main bridges, the Washington Bridge, the tunnels, and all that. They can't miss you. In other words, or leafleting, like mass leafleting. Get 100 people to do leafleting, 200 people. And meet all those 3 million people that come into the city every day or whatever, and try and get a leaflet to each one. You get the word out. Everybody knows about it. Everybody talks about it because they got a leaflet here or they saw a sign, and you reach a lot of people, and that's what makes it work. And then if your message is clear and it's just and so forth, saying that you're doing this all because of the poor farm workers and the conditions, and it works, and it just works, and people, you can see the sales go down and they drop and so forth. And we got to the point at one time, well, just before they called us that they wanted to negotiate, they couldn't even give the grape away. People were not only not buying, they would give you a pound of grapes, you bought $10 worth of groceries or 15, something like that. People would refuse to take the grapes. And so they knew that they had really lost it. I mean, they knew that they couldn't, they would have to come to terms with the union if they wanted to continue the grape industry. And that's how it got. And then there are other things that probably, you know, things that you would do, like for instance, we'd send them into the store, you know, like housewives, you know, like, I don't know the word is housewife, but like housewife type looking women that we'd send in there, you know, like they were going to do some shopping and all that. And then they, at a certain time, we would appear with the picket line outside. They hadn't done any shopping yet. They were just kind of waiting for the picket line to appear, you know. And then we would appear, and they says, what's that? Our people would say, what's that out there? Oh, some crazy people that bought some grapes in California. You mean you sell California grapes here? And they started that, and they get all of the, just things like that that just blew their minds. All that put a lot of attention. Things of that sort.
No, I'm changing a little bit. Cesar tried many, many things that were very, very effective, but among the most effective things that he did were fasts. Were you concerned when he went on his several fasts?
Yes, very much so. Very much so, but you couldn't talk Cesar out of that either. A lot of us were opposed to those, but it didn't do us any good, you know.
Excuse me, Richard, can you say a lot of us were opposed to the fasts?
When Cesar was fasting, were you concerned about the fast?
Yes. Some of us were very concerned about it. Because the fast that he did were very long. That's probably our concern. I could see somebody fasting for a week or 10 days. I can understand that very easily because I've done it myself. Okay, and I can understand that. But going like over 25 days or a month or something like that I couldn't. I had a hard time understanding that or going along with it. After it passed so many days, it was very hard on all of us. Even though he was doing the fasting, as the people around him was very difficult for us too, you know, because we knew that he was giving up a lot, you know. Especially this last one was very hard for me. The last long, big fast he had here, that was very difficult.
Did you tell him?
Yes, he used to tell. And he'd say, well, just another day or two. One more day or two. So another day became another day, and another one, and so forth. Yeah.
Were you ever concerned, besides the fast, about Cesar's health?
other than the fast, no, because Cesar, as you know, was a very clean living person. He didn't smoke. You know, when he was young, he smoked, but then he gave that up a long time ago. And he didn't drink too. He wasn't, you know, just, you know, he'd have a social drink every now and then, but not, he didn't drink. You know. And he was a vegetarian. He was on this macrobiotic diet, which is, I understand, is a very healthy diet. And he did all the right things, you know, taking care of his body. He exercised, he did yoga and exercised a lot. And so I thought that he was going to live forever, you know, being that my parents lived, both of them lived, were 100, you know. I thought Cesar was going to be around forever, but it didn't happen.
When you heard the news of Cesar's death, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Just like, I couldn't believe it, you know. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I thought it wasn't possible. When they told me, I the first thing that came to my mind, because they didn't, he says, Paul came in and said, Paul got the first call here, his son. And the first person he came to before anybody else, he came to me and he told me what had happened. He said, Richard, my father's dead. And the first thing that came to me was somebody shot him or you know, that assassinated him or something. That's the first thing that came to me, because he gave me details. I just thought, well, somebody must have shot him or something. And the first thing I said is, how bad is he? He said, he is dead, you know. And I just couldn't, I just...
Stop. Sorry, wouldn't
it? Yeah.
Rolling.
Marker, take 7.
Richard, when you heard about Cesar's death, what went through your mind?
I couldn't believe it at first. Paul came in and told me that he had just gotten word that he was the first one, like, he came to me first, even before going to his mother. He wanted me to go with him to tell his mother together. And so he told me, and I said, I just couldn't believe it. And I thought, the first thing that came to my mind, I thought somebody had probably shot him or did something like that, you know, an attempt. And I asked him, well, how bad is he? He said, no, he says he's dead, you know. And then I just kind of, well, I just don't know what happened after that. I kind of blanked out for a little bit. And then he says, I want you to come with my mother. And you were both, you know, we both cried there for a while until we composed ourselves. And then we went to tell his mother and the girls. We got them together. We called them in. He said, look, he wanted me to go with him. And so we told him. And it was, you can just imagine, you know, all everybody there. And so it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I still couldn't believe it. You know, up to date right now, I think it's 2 years now. I still think that somebody's going to walk into La Paz. And I just can't. It's never been real to me, you know. But anyway, and then after a little while, that after we had, you know, there with the family, I remembered something that he had asked me, a promise that I had made to him, you know. And it was about time to come for me to make good. He always asked me that when he died, he wanted me to build his coffin, you know. And I used to kid him. I said, Caesar, I said, come on, I says, you know, Caesar, I'll never outlive you, you know. I says, look here, you don't smoke, you don't drink, you have a good diet, you do exercise, every yoga, everything is and I do just the opposite that you do. So I'll never outlive you. So you better look for somebody else to build your coffin. He said, no, he says, when I die, I want you to build my coffin. I want you to make it out of pine. He told me what kind of wood and everything. And that came to my mind right away. Oh my God, this is his promise, you know. So I built his coffin. I made his coffin. That was something that he wanted me, and I promised that I'd do it if I would be that way. And it was. And so I had to come. I had to come across with a promise. That's the other thing that I remember him by, because he always wanted me to do that.
And when you were building this coffin, what memories went through your head?
Oh, I relived the whole... you know, I had a lot of time. It took me 38 hours to do it, you know. There was a lot of interruptions because a lot of people were coming by, and, you know. And then at the same time we were grieving, I had to do that work. It was very difficult because... but I did it. I had somebody help me. And it's just, I had time to relive a lot of our good, you know, the good times and some of the hard times and everything, you know, like, It took a lot. It took a lot to do it.
Yeah. How did you tell Helen?
Well, we called Helen and we called the girls together and everybody else, the sons and whoever. And we assembled and said, look, you know, we have something. We have to tell her. It's very difficult. Helen said that she knew right away that it had something to do with Caesar. He just, even before he told us, he saw Paul and me coming in.
Camera roll 33, sound roll 14, take 8.
Richard, how did you and Paul go about telling Helen and the girls what had happened?
We talked about it. He said, I want you to come with me to tell my mother. She said, she doesn't know yet, or the girls or anybody. So we called them. We went home and we called them all together and just told them what had happened, you know. And Helen told us afterward that she, as soon as we called them all together, she saw Paul and myself getting everybody together. She knew, she said, she knew exactly that something had happened to Caesar. She just felt it, you know. And so we just said, it's done, you know, it's happened, you know. So he died in his sleep, you know, so it wasn't as hard, I guess, for anybody of us, knowing that he died in his sleep as if he had gotten shot or something. It would have been way, way, way harder, I think. You know. He died very peaceful, and we found out that he was, I saw him, it looked like he was asleep, you know, it looked like you just move him and he would wake up.
Yeah. Do you think he had any, since it had any premonitions or had any sense that this was coming?
I kind of think that he did. I kind of think that he did. Because a lot of strange things happened. Just 22 days before he died, we celebrated his birthday in La Paz. A beautiful celebration. He cooked for everybody. He used to cook. He was a pretty decent chef, you know, cook, you know. He liked to cook this Indian cuisine from India. And he did a beautiful, beautiful spread. It was just I think that's the best feast I've ever had in my life, you know, the kind of him and Helen helped him put it together. And we had a lot of fun, you know, and it was that particular night he was, you know, he was sitting like, not a head table, but a table towards the corner. And he was there and I was sitting, I used to sit with the guys over there from far away, you know, and he asked Bertie to ask him to come. He wanted me to sit with him. It was kind of, to me it was kind of strange because he said, it's my birthday, I want you to sit with me. And so that was one, you know, it's only 22 days before he died, you know. And the other one was, you know, Caesar wasn't one to take time off for himself. And a month before he died, he said, Richard, says, you want to go to Mexico? I says, yeah, I always want to go to Mexico. Who's going? He says, I am. Really? I thought, you know, I thought that the whole board was going to go out for a retreat or something like that, you know. Who else is coming? He says, no, nobody, just you and I. Really? Yeah, let's take off. It was just. And so a month before he died, we spent a whole week together. We hadn't done in ages, you know. So I, you know, to me that seems like something told him something was going to happen. I don't know. See, looking back at it now, those are strange things that he did, and they weren't normal for Caesar to do that, you know, take a week off and go out there and just kick back, you know, and asking me to go with him and so forth. So, to me, I think that, you know, he felt something, or I don't know.
What's the one thing that, the most important thing that Tessa left you?
Cesar was a teacher, you know, he liked to teach people, he liked to, I think he taught us all to, not to be selfish with our time, you know, to be, I think that to give of ourselves for others, I think that's the biggest thing that he, you know, to do something with our lives, not only for ourselves, but we have to do something for other people. I think that that's he implanted that on each and every one of us, and so, you know, for some of us it was easy, but for others I think it was a little harder to do that. But yeah, he was always saying, look, you have to do something for others. You can't just do for yourself, you know. You can't be too comfortable, because you get too comfortable, you forget to help others, you know. You have to, that's why he never had a, he never drove a new car. We just, not that we couldn't afford it now, but, you know, we could have gotten a new car for him. He did a lot of traveling, you know. And he never says, no, I can't be going to a meeting with farm workers and driving a brand new car. You think I'm crazy? What are you going to think, you know? It's not right, you know. They don't have a new car, so I can't have a new car either, you know. This is fine. This will get me there, you know. This will get me there. Don't worry about my car. But for safety, see, so we have to something good that if you have to get away quick or something. No, this is fine. So we just couldn't. In fact, we had some arguments on that sometimes, you know, trying to force him to get some better wheels, or he wouldn't do it. Those are the things that I think, those are the examples or the teachings that he, you know, instilled in us. So.
Got everything? Right?